Hey, Faith family. Welcome to the Beyond Sunday podcast at Calvary Bible, where we go beyond the Sunday sermon to explore some rabbit holes and to bring some biblical truths to the surface. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Calvary Bible Church, welcome back to another episode of Beyond Sunday.
Beyond Sunday.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. You know what other day it is, Randy?
I do.
What day
Joke
is it?
Joke day.
Yeah, but it's...
Jill's birthday.
It's almost Jill's birthday, and it is your birthday. I've got the jokes ready for you. You ready?
Because it's my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. What did the pirate say on his 80th birthday? His 80th birthday.
Okay, what do they normally say?
That's a good place to start, and you're on the right track.
I don't know.
I'm matey. There you go. Okay. If you're lucky, you'll get another one. Okay. Birthday joke for the podcast people out there. Happy birthday, Randall.
Thank you.
And while that is important, because it is.
It's my favorite thing to do on my birthday, Beyond Sunday.
Yeah, I bet. This is probably the highlight of your day. we want to talk about Matthew chapter 12,
mm-hmm.
Which is where we were this past Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an interesting question here that came in to start us off. So in Matthew 12, verse 7, right, mm-hmm. I'll read it for us. Jesus' response to the Pharisees, right, who are upset about the disciples plucking the grains of wheat. Jesus says, and then also doing good. Right, as far as healing a man,
mm-hmm.
that hadn't come up yet. That was later.
Yep. Yeah, 9
okay.
to 14.
So part of his response, though, in verse 7 reads this, "And if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless." Okay, so he's quoting Hosea there, and the question is, so let me sum that up mm-hmm. by saying this. In other words, it's not the outward actions that matter. It's the heart or the intention of a person that is more important. Okay. Have you seen people try and justify their behavior that may or may not be wise, but say, "You don't know my heart. You don't know what my intentions are." So the disciples are doing something, they're being criticized for it,
mm-hmm.
judged fairly or not. And Jesus says, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice." You should know what that means. So have you seen believers, followers of Jesus say, "Oh, like this is what Jesus is. He's after the heart. So you don't know what I'm trying to accomplish here." And would that be a fair retort or not?
I'll answer the second part first. It's not valid.
Okay.
And to go to the first part, so there has to be a connection between the heart and the actions. So Jesus is not using, if I'm trying to understand, maybe I'm not, but if I am understanding you, so it's not the end justifies the means.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that. And it's not that the intention of the heart justifies the action. I was trying to find I don't even know if that's the right parallel, but that's what's in my head right now is Jesus is not teaching that the intention of the heart justifies any actions. In this case, for instance, in our text, they were not doing wrong according to the law because they were hungry. And there was food there that could sustain them.
Mm-hmm.
So the Pharisees' interpretation is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
On that ground alone, it's wrong.
Yeah.
But depending on where we're going with this, we can get to that verse 7 again and what was their deeper issue. But
right.
we'll stop there. And
sure. Yeah. And I think sure right so track. Hosea says, "I desire," actually, if we read it, and did you think this is where the question was going?
Okay, no, I didn't
but he know. Says, "I desire steadfast love." Right, if you in the ESV,
chesed
yep. right,
mm-hmm.
and in Matthew here in our ESV, it's translated mercy,
mm-hmm.
But
or
either
compassion. Yep.
Yeah, either way, is that a fair summary? I summed it up by saying God's after the heart of the matter, the person, their intentions, rather than their outward action.
That is true. Yes, that in Matthew 5, I believe, I think it's before 6. So in Matthew 5, for instance, we see that repeatedly where when Jesus interprets the law, mm-hmm. that section that you've incorporated into the catechism that we're kind of working on, you know, you've heard it mm-hmm. say, but I say unto you.
Yeah.
So in that section, he keeps getting to a heart issue. Mm-hmm. So yes, yeah. I think that's true.
And so then the question then is, have you seen Christians misuse a verse like that to justify their behavior?
I haven't personally.
Okay.
Doesn't mean it doesn't yeah. happen. I haven't personally heard that.
Yeah.
I haven't personally encountered someone doing that in my presence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't say I have either. This is not the same, but I have seen people misuse Bible passages
yeah.
to
Yeah.
justify their behavior.
Now, one thing I have said, though, maybe this is what helps with this question. I have said to a person, I appreciate your sincerity, but you're sincerely wrong. Mm-hmm. So I have said that to someone, which when I think back to those occasions, that's making me think, okay, they had good intentions. Mm-hmm. They were sincere in what they were attempting to do, mm-hmm. but remember the, as I was saying a moment ago, the action of the heart the attitude of the heart, the intention of the heart should match righteousness. Mm-hmm. And so in my reaction or reply to that parishioner would have been, I appreciate your sincerity, but that doesn't make what you're doing right, because that's sincerely wrong.
Right.
So
even in their sincerity, what they're doing or saying
yeah.
is not
so maybe
right.
that is closer to that than I was originally thinking, mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah, I think that is closer. Yeah, that's fair. It's good. Moving on, second question. Mm-hmm. Help me know when my idea of good practice. So in the outline, mm-hmm. you mentioned that Jesus goes to the scripture
yeah.
to justify
twice.
And explain
yeah, yeah.
what his disciples were doing. But then in verse 12,
right.
is that right?
Of how much more value is a man than a sheep,
yeah.
so it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath.
Right. So help me to know when my idea of what I think is good is maybe not God's idea of good practice. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
My idea of good may seem right and feel right to me,
yeah.
but then when does it cross the line? How do I know when my idea in my heart is not actually, God wouldn't consider it good too?
I think the first one for me is, let's go back to the intention or the motive. I think if I can be careful with my own evaluation of why am I doing what I'm doing, then I shouldn't be attempting to do good if that's my goal. To look good or to, you know, to mm-hmm. to be good, if that's my goal, that's not worshipful. And we're talking about Sabbath observance or how do we act on a Sunday, mm-hmm. as you were helping me with last week. It needs to be a worship-filled day. So I think that would be my place to start. The second thing is, though, from the person, let's go to the opposite side of it. It's not you or me and our motive for doing it. But is what we're about to do, is that really necessary? Does that neighbor have a need? Mm-hmm. Like if I look out there and there's a guy that's elderly and sickly and he's trying to dig a hole mm-hmm. in his backyard, and I know how hard digging is in our neighborhood because of all the fill that they use for these homes. Does he have a need for me to go out there with a shovel and say, hey, can I give you a hand with that? Mm-hmm. It'll only take me a second.
Yeah.
Is that a real need? I would say that's a real need. And so one of the evaluation, the criteria for whether it be a good thing or not, mm-hmm. a good practice would be assessing not only my motive for doing it, but what about their level of need? That would be kind of what I would look for. In other words, yeah. is it like in this case, a man with a withered hand, that hand that just doesn't function, that's a pretty big need. And then, you know, the sheep falling into a pit, you got to get it out of there.
Right.
Those are like almost like a glaring, that's a need. I can meet that need, not the withered hand one. I could help with the sheep.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's...
Now, if I'm the Pharisees, I'm saying, heal his hand tomorrow.
Yeah. And the number of people that I read, you know, they've done these... The great thing about these scholars is they read a lot of Jewish material too.
Yeah.
So when they read how the Jews interpreted these texts and some of the potential replies of the Pharisees, you know, they come up with that same thing. Well, why couldn't it wait?
Yeah. But Jesus just decided it didn't need to.
He's making a statement.
Yeah, it's part of what's happening here.
He is. He's making a statement, and then it also gets back to, again, I'm not sure what you're... where you go from this, but you know, in verse 7, I desire mercy. That was one of these arguments that struck at the heart of the Pharisees' problem in interpreting the law. For them, there was no mercy in it. Like they had no kindness for fellow men. And so here they are trying to keep the law of God when one of God's primary character traits is his steadfast love, his chesed. And they and God says, I desire mercy more than sacrifice, and they don't get mercy at all. And there's a reason theologically that they don't. I mean, they don't get it because they're not walking with God. They don't know God at the foundational Old Testament level. They have not experienced the grace of God like Noah found grace or favor in the eyes of the Lord. And I think that was Genesis 6:8. They have not found God's favor. Therefore, they have no steadfast love for anybody.
Yeah. My mind's going in the same direction, but with two different thoughts, especially to move to our last question here. One of the things you said on Sunday, I think you said it. If you didn't, it's just a thought I had, but I appreciated the verse 12 there where Jesus says, it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. So they're thinking regularly, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this.
Yeah.
And Jesus says, do good. Do good.
Yeah.
Right. And
mercy.
Yeah. And the commands, right, that he sums up the 613 Old Testament commands by saying, love God and love your neighbor.
Yeah.
Not don't do this, don't do this, don't do. This is a faith. These are faith-driven actions that are in response to what God has done and is doing.
Yeah. I wish I would have said on Sunday, you know, early in the opening minutes of the teaching time, that one of the reasons why God wrote so much of the Gospels from the vantage point of that interaction between Jesus and the religious leaders is because the default setting of our heart is like them. I'm convinced that's why there's so much biblical real estate devoted to the interaction and the dialogue and the discussion and the debates, you know, the theological debates, the interpretive debates. It's because you just think about, I mean, when I ask, I don't know if you were there on Sunday, but and you couldn't see it, but when I said, how many of you grew up in this mentality of Sunday, you can't do anything. You know, I was joking, obviously, about how much, you know, don't even breathe.
Yeah.
But a lot of people shook their heads or raised their hands. Yes, this is the way I was brought up. Well, that not only tells you what's in the human heart, but it also tells you what Christendom, you know, think about the variety of church backgrounds in that room now. And it's different from 20 years ago. But now, there's so much variety in that sanctuary on a Sunday morning of religious experiences and church traditions.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, but everyone resonated with, yeah, we are geared toward don't do, as opposed to hearing Jesus. So it is lawful to do good. So.
Well, it's interesting if you look to the Old Testament too, is it's the one commandment that doesn't, not the one, but it's one of the few that says, it doesn't start off with don't commit adultery, don't murder. It says remember the Sabbath.
Yes, but that's a great point.
But in that, in the remembering, you're not, you're supposed to stop. Mm-hmm. So you're not working, you're not doing,
keeping it holy.
Because you're that's how you are to remember, by stopping. Yes. And that's that word Shabbat.
Yeah.
Stop, cease.
Yeah.
So that brings me to my last question, just very practically. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of things, but I'll ask you to either add to it or reiterate. What does your Sabbath, your time of resting and stopping, what's that look like? What are some things you try to incorporate?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is not being productive. So I start there because, and it's weird, right, for me. So it's kind of a quasi. But if you caught me from like Friday noon mm-hmm. until Saturday noon, let's say, so that there's my quote day off. Mm-hmm. So not being productive means that I am conscious of the fact that my earning ability is not what sustains me. That mm-hmm. it's God. This is a gift from God. I am the one providing for you rest. Don't do any work today. So not being productive would be one mm-hmm. one way I would start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That stuck with me. You've brought that to the table before here. And I remember I forget what the context was or why we were talking about it, but I distinctly remember there's no need to produce.
Not on that day. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just a good biblical reminder, the idea and truth that we aren't sustaining ourselves mm-hmm. or this world.
No.
This is not a Randy or Jonathan
it's not.
World. It's mm-hmm. a God-centered world.
Yeah.
And that's a helpful thing to be reminded of. And when you stop, God continues.
But also, that's why at the end, I was glad I didn't forget. I forgot a couple other things, but I was glad at the end I didn't forget to say, you know, the stats show these under 35 folks tying their identity and their worth to their work. Mm-hmm. So I need to be fulfilled in my work. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, that is the worship of work. Mm-hmm. And so what I tried to say at the end, I hope I did say it specifically, that you put that to rest, that's a pun intended, mm-hmm. you put that to rest if you observe a Sabbath.
Yeah.
You are now consciously saying, work is not my God, mm-hmm. God is my God. And I have the opportunity and the privilege and the joy to work, but mm-hmm. it's not who I am.
Yeah.
Whereas under 35, and this article was talking about how the workplace is changing and the relationship between employer and employee is changing because the employee is expecting the employer to fulfill them, to make their life fulfilled.
Yeah.
And that's only something God can do. You're putting too much on your employer's shoulder if you're thinking that your work is going to be your all in all. So
yeah, I can see that, because the younger generation does want to be fulfilled. They want their work to be meaningful and purposeful. And taken too far, you're putting that weight on your employer.
Yeah. So
yeah. No, that's good. It's a helpful thing to stop, whether it's from noon on Friday to Saturday or a Sunday, whatever it is, to stop and be still and be reminded of what God has done.
Yeah. And that part leads to what you were helping us with on Sunday as well. And last week when you and I were talking, and I'm sure with the next level people, but that ability to rest spiritually. Mm-hmm. It does start with stopping, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as you've said,
we don't
stop and now focus on a different type of rest.
Mm-hmm.
This is spiritual rest. So to be able to sit down, to be able to sit down and read for me, not for a sermon, not for a lecture, just read, and read for the enjoyment of reading, read to gain knowledge of God, to stop. But to be able to do that at peace,
mm-hmm.
no agitation in my heart, that's that kind of spiritual rest that, you know, that the Sabbath is mm-hmm. describing.
Yeah. And I think one of the things you said at the very beginning, you took a moment, I think you just drew everyone's attention in, and said, does your Sunday look any different than the rest of the world's day, minus your time at church? Mm. And that's really a good question to be asking, really, of all of our days.
Yeah, good point.
But Sunday should be no different than the rest. And so how are our times of rest setting us apart?
Yeah.
Because in a lot of ways, in this context and culture for Jesus and the Jews, it was weird, right? The Romans were working 7 days a week. There was no Sunday, day of rest. I remember reading, it wasn't until like the 300s where Constantine decided that Sunday is going to be a day of rest, the Lord's Day, and that was kind of declared, and that changed things. But prior to that, they were very different to stop, unproductive.
Yeah, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But I think that's why your comment last week was so helpful about make the day Christ-focused.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was very helpful to me because that is the major difference between, let's say, you know, like my neighbor, I'm off on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but what else? His day is not going to be focused on Jesus. Is mine.
Mm-hmm.
And how can that be? You know, what does that look like to have a Jesus-focused day versus a neighbor that, so, you know, that's why I think that was so foundational when you said, you know, hey, let's, first of all.
You know, yeah, it's pretty simple, basic.
Anyway. Yeah, but it's.
But not but it's, easy to.
Yeah, because you figure it out. I mean, it's sad, right? You and I could come to church, be in church, and then go back home, and that's it. Jesus is over for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, that's a bummer.
I think someone wrote, and I thought it was very true, as soon as the sermon is over, it's very quick to say, to change subjects, and you talk about whatever.
Yeah, hey, interest. The ball game's coming on.
Right, exactly.
March Madness. UNC beat Duke.
Did they?
They did. I mean, that's the kind of stuff.
Congratulations, Michelle.
I know. She was happy.
I bet.
So it was at Duke.
And so there's an example.
See how easy that is to get into that?
Yeah, I'm trying to bring it back. Trying to bring it back.
To worship.
Exactly. But as soon as the sermon's over,
that's it.
Why is it not more natural for us to, you know, encourage a brother or sister to stop and pray for them on the way home, to ask a question about the sermon you know, something that happened in the morning?
Yeah. It's because we're human. Mm-hmm. We are steeped in this world, and these types of conversations are part of our fight for faith and growing us and shaping us, and we're better, hopefully better at it for it.
And hopefully, well, not hopefully, but, and God is merciful.
He is merciful. Thank the Lord for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. All right, Randy, ready for joke number two?
I have no choice.
I bought my friend a refrigerator for his birthday. You should have seen his face light up when he opened it. All right. That's all. All right. I'm out. Have a great week. We'll see you Sunday. Oh, and if you have any questions for the podcast, you know where to email them. Randy doesn't, but I do. podcast@cbcmj.com. Have a great week. Bye. Thanks again for joining us on today's episode. And remember, our Sunday sermons are meant to lead us to a life of worship beyond Sunday.